Let's suppose that you're a man who has to travel a lot in your line of work, and much of the travel has been to third world African countries, many of which have been under corrupt and sometimes tyrannical governments. In your travels, you have been in not one, not two, but three plane crashes. In one of these crashes, you landed in the ocean, were not picked up, and had to swim for 24 hours before reaching shore. Furthermore, on these trips, not only has your body been repeatedly beaten up in accidents, but you have been thrown in jail time after time after committing no crime. Worse, five times the authorities went further than that and resorted to torture. They lashed you with a whip for 39 stripes. Three times they went still further and beat your body with heavy wooden rods. One time an angry mob even threw rocks at you and ended up leaving you for dead. Does this man have much to be thankful for? If our physical life is more comfortable than that of the man that I have just described, then do we have a lot to be thankful for? Let's compare our situation in life to that which he experienced. Have any of us suffered in those ways, yet are we thankful because we have not? We're about to observe our National Day of Thanksgiving, and it is a good time to reflect on just how much we have been blessed by God. Often, we do not think to realize just how much we really have been blessed. In the sermon, I would like to explore some of the ways we have been blessed by God and for which we should be thankful. Our reasons that we tend to forget these blessings, and what we should do to acquire and maintain a thankful attitude. We might title the sermon simply Thankfulness. Let's turn to Colossians chapter 3. Colossians chapter 3, verse 15. Paul said, "And let the peace of God rule in your hearts, to which also you were called in one body, and be thankful." The Greek word there, translated thankful, is eucharistos. That's Strong's Greek word number 2170. The same Greek word that from which is derived what Catholics call the Eucharist. However, often we're not thankful, as we should be, for a number of reasons. First, we may have no sense of history. We do not know or do not realize or do not really think of how people lived in the past. Another reason we may not be thankful, we're not calibrated. We compare our situation in life not with that of the average person in the world today or yesterday, but rather with that of high-profile individuals who appear to us to have it much better than we do. A third reason we may not be thankful: we think we have been unjustly judged by God because we don't see the big picture. Example, the famous biblical example being that of Job. A fourth reason: we may look at the physical only, and we don't think of the wonderful spiritual blessings which God has given us. Let's examine the first reason that we may not be thankful, which is that we have no sense of history. We all have a human tendency to act as if history began when we were born. Thank you. Or perhaps even later, when we began to be conscious of the world around us. People began to tell us about the things which happened before we were born. But to us, they never really happened. We never saw them or heard about them as they were happening. Isn't that, for example, why children and young people have difficulty really understanding the aging process. Yes, they see elderly people, but these people have always been old. The children have never known them any other way. They have never seen a once vibrant person actually grow old and frail. We can have the same myopic attitude toward God's blessings to us in this age. Think of Ireland. In portions of the last two decades, it has been one of the most economically dynamic countries in Europe, with a thriving biotechnology and pharmaceuticals industry. But what was the situation in Ireland 175 years ago? Most of the potato crop failed due to a fungus. The poor in Ireland were totally dependent on potatoes. People had begun to starve. Over 1 million are believed to have starved to death. Many others, those who were able to, migrated to this country or elsewhere. The population of Ireland dropped by almost half. Contrast, by the way, much of the potato crop in Ireland also failed just a few years ago, this time due to drought, if I remember correctly. But was there any suffering as a result? Of course not. Like any other prosperous and developed country, Ireland simply bought on the world market the food that it had been unable to grow itself that year. Isn't that a lot to be thankful for? How about India? We hear that country mentioned very often in the news today as a place where the software, electronics, and fine chemicals industries have been booming. Call centers are being set up in many cities. Companies are building research and development centers there to take advantage of the large supply of low-cost educated labor. But when I was a boy, India was also frequently in the news, and for a far different reason. It seemed that every 2 or 3 years or thereabouts, there would be a major crop failure in some part of India, and people would be starving. We would see them starving back at that time on our television sets. But then progress was made. The economic changes that produced the somewhat booming India of today were beginning. The last major Indian famine that I can remember occurred in the mid-1970s. In the 1980s, a very severe drought struck southern India. The monsoon rains failed for multiple years. Decades-old coconut palm trees along the coast shriveled up and died. Wells went dry, and drinking water had to be brought into many areas by truck. But there was no famine. The country, by that time, was able to afford to buy and distribute the needed food in those areas. Isn't that a lot to be thankful for? It is true, there are still children starving in India, but these are isolated cases. There is sufficient food available locally in those areas, and the solution is simply a matter of finding the affected families and getting the food aid to them. That is different from a famine. Sometimes we may fret over outsourcing. Outsourcing of R&D, outsourcing of manufacturing. Maybe, back before I retired, maybe my salary was lower than it would have been had it not been so easy to outsource research and development to countries such as India. However, I am thankful that large numbers of people there are no longer starving. What about China? During the last four decades, after the government relaxed its commitment to Marxist economic orthodoxy and started to permit much more private business, the country has made tremendous progress, with hundreds of millions of people lifted out of poverty. We can see all the Made in China products at Walmart and other stores today. However, think of the terrible situation in China 60 to 65 years ago. In the late 1950s, in the so-called, but very misnamed, Great Leap Forward, the brutal regime of Mao Zedong ordered the rural people to build village industries instead of working their land. And the result was possibly the worst famine in human history. But between about 1959 and 1962 in China. Today, it is indeed true that the Chinese government is not particularly friendly toward this nation, and also it has provoked its Southeast Asian neighbors with its activities in the South China Sea. But still, however, I would much rather see the Chinese people living today at a somewhat decent living standard rather than near the starvation point as they were several decades ago. Let's turn to a couple of passages in Proverbs that are relevant. Proverbs 24, verse 17. Do not rejoice when your enemy falls, and do not let your heart be glad when he stumbles. And also, page over, chapter 25, verse 21. If your enemy is hungry, give him bread to eat. And if he is thirsty, give him water to drink. If a nation is not friendly toward us, we still should not want the people of that nation to suffer. Just a point there. But how about the Church of God? Today, we have the freedom to meet on the Sabbath and worship God without having to hide from the police, not only here, but in most other countries of the world. We have the freedom to preach the gospel of the kingdom of God, not just word of mouth, person to person, but in an organized manner. Church organizations in this country do not have to pay taxes. In this nation, we are even allowed to deduct money contributed to God's church from our taxable income. We as individuals do not have to pay income taxes on it. Currently, our young men and women are not threatened with the draft. Yes, we may sometimes lose our jobs over the Sabbath and holy days, or our children may sometimes get harassment from teachers and classmates. But compare that to all the persecution which our spiritual forebears suffered, often leading to outright martyrdom. We can see this through the book of Acts. Reflecting how common it was, let's turn to Hebrews chapter 11, the faith chapter. Hebrews chapter 11. Starting midway in verse 35. Others were tortured, not accepting deliverance, that they might obtain a better resurrection. Still others had trial of mockings and scourgings, yes, and of chains and imprisonment. They were stoned, they were sawn in two, were tempted, were slain with the sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented, of whom the world was not worthy. They wandered in deserts and mountains, in dens and caves of the earth. And all these, having obtained a good testimony through faith, did not receive the promise, God having provided something better for us, that they should not be made perfect apart from us. The persecution of the truth, described here, did not cease after the first few centuries. It was the rule in all of the world until about 200 to 300 years ago. And we're told in many places in the Bible that there will indeed be persecution and martyrdom again. But we have much to be thankful for in the current span of time, during which persecution is light. A second reason we may not be thankful is that we're not calibrated regarding our situation in life. What is my human tendency when I start comparing my situation in life with the situations of others? Do I think of the billions of people in third world countries who still live in hovels and for whom each day is a struggle to get enough food to feed their families? Do I think of my own ancestors in this country who crossed the Atlantic only to toil their lives away for generations, living in one-room log cabins or worse, losing half their children to disease before they were 5 years old? Remember that even President Lincoln lost 3 of his 4 children to childhood diseases. Do I think of the 5-year-old over in a local hospital dying of cancer? No. We tend to act as if all people everywhere live and always have lived at the same standard we do. When I start to compare my situation in life, how blessed I am, at least in a physical sense, with those of others, the person I tend to use as a comparison standard is, of course, Bill Gates. If only I had seen in the 1970s the coming personal computer boom and the need for an operating system. I suspect that other human beings also have that tendency. And it is self-defeating. It takes our minds off God's blessings. We don't think we're blessed all that much. We start complaining. We got the gimmies. Well, maybe we don't go all the way up to Bill Gates. Maybe our standard is the Joneses, and we want to keep up with them, keeping up with the Joneses. There's no one in this congregation named Jones, as far as I know, so I can pick on the Joneses, just as I like to pick on John Doe from time to time in sermons. By the way, interestingly, the Joneses who used to live in our neighborhood, just around the bend in the street from us, they lived in a house which was more than half again the size of our house and which was valued almost twice as high. So there was no point in trying to keep up with them. They were the Joneses in our neighborhood. But anyhow, let's turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 10. Gets right on the subject. Second Corinthians chapter 10, in verse 12, till it hits it on the head. For we dare not class ourselves or compare ourselves with those who commend themselves, but they, measuring themselves by themselves and comparing themselves among themselves, are not wise. It is not wise for us to compare ourselves with one another or with other human beings out there. The sense in this verse is that of comparing one's spiritual state with that of others, but it can easily be applied to physical blessings also. Let's turn to Psalm 73. Psalm 73. Starting in verse 1, truly God is good to Israel, to such as are pure in heart. But as for me, my feet had almost stumbled, my steps had clearly slipped. For I was envious of the boastful when I saw the prosperity of the wicked. For there are no pangs in their death, but their strength is firm. They are not in trouble as other men, nor are they plagued like other men. Therefore pride serves as their necklace. Violence covers them like a garment. Their eyes bulge with abundance. They have more than heart could wish. They scoff and speak wickedly concerning oppression. They speak loftily. They set their mouth against the heavens, and their tongue walks through the earth. Skipping down to verse 15, if I had said, I will speak thus, behold, I would have been untrue to the generation of your children. When I thought how to understand this, it was too painful for me until I went into the sanctuary of God. Then I understood their end. Surely you set them in slippery places. You cast them down to destruction. Oh, how they are brought to desolation as in a moment. They're utterly consumed with terrors. This is instructive. Although perhaps the person with whom we are comparing ourselves would not necessarily be classified as wicked, like those here in Psalm 73, we shouldn't compare ourselves with one another. For that matter, how do we know that the apparently very blessed person with whom we're comparing ourselves is not undergoing severe difficulties in his own life? How do we know that he is happy at all? We see only the outward appearance. Yes, Abraham was rich, but would we like to face the trial of being asked to sacrifice our son? Job was rich, but would we like to undergo the trials that he went through? Solomon had it all, but if we were in a similar situation, would we let it ruin our lives as he did? A number of years ago, quite a number of years, I met another fellow in the church who seemed to be living my dream. He appeared to be enjoying a situation in this physical life similar to what I had long dreamed about, his family, his job, and where he lived. However, I caught myself and realized that I should not let my mind drift into envy. All I could see was the outward appearance. What was this man's life really like? Was he really blessed as much as he appeared to be? Was he really happy? I had no way of knowing, and it was none of my business. I have heard since then that he has bounced around the country with long-distance moves at least a couple of times. I don't know whether any job losses may have been involved, but I had heard he had had to move a couple of times. But what about the Israelites in the wilderness during the Exodus? God was continually performing a succession of miracles to help them. However, they seemed oblivious to what he was doing for them, fearing to go on and follow his commands. Their dream seemed to be to have again what they had had in Egypt, and they seemed to forget that they had been slaves there. Let's turn to Numbers chapter 11. Numbers chapter 11, verse 5. We remember the fish which we ate freely in Egypt, the cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions, and the garlic. But now our whole being is dried up. There is nothing at all except this manna before our eyes. The manna was actually giving them all the nutrients they needed, but they weren't satisfied. They dreamed of what they had had before, forgetting that they had been slaves. The fact that we should be thankful for what we have and that we should be content in our situation does not mean that we should not try to improve it if we see the opportunity to do so. Let's turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 7. Actually, let's start in verse 20. Let each one remain in the same calling in which he was called. Were you called while a slave? Do not be concerned about it. But if you can be made free, rather use it. We should try to better our situation if we reasonably can, and we could potentially help us serve God in a more effective way. We can be thankful for what we have and still try to better our situation, but we still must not let ourselves drift into an unthankful attitude. The third reason that we may not be thankful is if we think we have been unjustly judged or unjustly punished by God because we don't see the big picture. Perhaps we're undergoing considerable trials in our own life. Perhaps a major health problem. Perhaps maybe a severe marriage or family problem. Possibly great difficulties with our job situation or our financial status? Should we let that interfere with our thankfulness for the blessings which God has given us? We may find it easy to sink into an attitude of resenting the way that we think God is not blessing us, especially if we think we're trying to obey Him. We know from chapters such as Deuteronomy chapter 28, the promises of blessings for obedience and curses for disobedience. But what did Job do when he suffered trials? He let himself sink into a bad attitude. Let's turn to Job chapter 19. God had to correct him for it, first through Elihu and then personally, and Job listened. But anyhow, let's turn to Job chapter 19. While Job thought he had been unjustly punished by God, chapter 19, verse 6, Job said, "Know then that God has wronged me and has surrounded me with his net. If I cry out concerning wrong, I am not heard. If I cry aloud, there is no justice. He," meaning God, "has fenced up my way so that I cannot pass, and he has set darkness in my paths. He has stripped me of my glory and taken the crown from my head. He breaks me down on every side, and I am gone. My hope he has uprooted like a tree. He has also kindled his wrath against me, and he counts me as one of his enemies. His troops come together and build up the road against me. They encamp all around my tent." Skipping down to verse 21. "Have pity," Job said to his friends, "have pity on me. Have pity on me, O you my friends, for the hand of God has struck me. Why do you persecute me as God does and are not satisfied with my flesh?" Job thought he was being unjustly punished by God. He didn't realize that the trial actually came from Satan and not from God, as we know from the first couple of chapters of Job. And Job at the time didn't realize that God was allowing Satan to do that in order to teach Job a lesson that he needed. The trial was actually going to benefit him. People don't see the big picture. We don't see the big picture so often. Not only here in the Bible, but we see many illustrations of this type of outcry, like the one of Job, in secular art as well. For example, if you're an opera buff, you may remember that the aria Vici d'arte from Puccini's opera Tosca is a classic example. But do we really see the big picture? At that time, here in Job chapter 19, Job didn't. He did not yet realize that God was not the one who had brought the curses on him. God had allowed Satan to test Job in order to teach him some valuable lessons. All of this was going on behind the scenes, and Job couldn't see it. When Job finally learned his lesson, God gave him twice as much as he had had before, even though he had been rich before. When we understand that the big picture exists, although we may not yet see it, we realize that we should be thankful even in trials. Let's turn to James chapter 1. James chapter 1, verse 2, James said, "My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. But let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect," or complete. I presume the Greek word teleos there means complete. Or mature, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. We should be thankful even in trials. Fourth reason that we may not be thankful is that we look at the physical only. Think of those people out in the world who seem to be on top of the world, to have it all. Remember what we read earlier in Psalm 73. How many of those people are actually being called now? Let's turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 1. Verse 26, we sing this verse in a hymn. Verse 26, "For you see your calling, brethren, that not many wise according to the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble are called. But God has chosen the foolish things of the world to put to shame the wise, and God has chosen the weak things of the world to put to shame the things which are mighty, and the base things of the world and the things which are despised God has chosen, and the things which are not to bring to nothing the things that are, that no flesh should glory in his presence." How many of the great of the world are actually being called now? And what is their future? Is it to die in the tribulation? To die in spiritual ignorance and later come up in the general resurrection after the millennium to be taught at that time? Remember that if that is the case, we will have the opportunity to be their teachers. We have the unique opportunity to be blessed in this age with God's truth and his Holy Spirit and the opportunity for salvation, to be among the first fruits. Let's turn a few pages over to 1 Corinthians chapter 15. Verse 19. "If in this life only we have hope in Christ, we're of all men the most pitiable." Our main hope is in the future, after our death and to be in that first resurrection. But we need to make sure, when we think about this, we need to make sure that we're not praying the prayer of the Pharisee, as in Luke 18, verse 11, the one who was thanking God that he wasn't in his as other men in his mind. We can't go that way. But to maintain a think, in recap, to maintain a thankful attitude, we should keep the following points in mind, and we've gone over them. First, to maintain a sense of history, realize that our situation is generally tremendously more comfortable than that of most people living in previous ages. Second, we need to think of how blessed we are compared with most of mankind, even today. We shouldn't be comparing ourselves with a few people who seem by outward appearance to have it all in this world. Third, we need to keep the big picture in mind. We need to realize that God can even use trials to bring blessings on us, teach us lessons that we need to learn. And fourth, we need to remember that the biggest blessings of God are not physical. Remember the man I described at the beginning? Well, there was one man who did fit this description. If you replace the plane crashes by shipwrecks and the African countries by provinces of the Roman Empire, I took the liberty to modernize the example in the introduction. You may have noticed that I was paraphrasing 2 Corinthians 11, verses 24 and 25. Let's turn there. 2 Corinthians 11, verses 24 and 25. Paul was describing what he had been through. "From the Jews 5 times I received 40 stripes minus one. 3 times I was beaten with rods. 1 I was stoned. 3 times I was shipwrecked. 1 night and 1 day have I been in the deep. In journeys often, in perils of waters, in perils of robbers, in perils of my own countrymen, in perils of the Gentiles, in perils in the city, in perils in the wilderness, in perils in the sea, in perils among false brethren, in weariness and toil, in sleeplessness often, in hunger and thirst, in fastings often, in cold and nakedness, besides the other things, what comes upon me daily, my deep concern for all the churches." The man was the Apostle Paul. whom I was describing in the introduction, just modernizing the example. Was he a thankful man? For the answer, let's turn to Philippians chapter 4. Philippians chapter 4, verse 11, Paul said, Philippians 4:11, "Not that I speak in regard to need, for I have learned in whatever state I am to be content. I know how to be abased, and I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me." Paul was a very thankful man, despite all he had to endure. And God used Paul to leave us a command which concerns thankfulness. If we keep in mind these 4 points I mentioned, it will be much easier for us to follow this command, and we're going to turn there again in a few pages over in Colossians chapter 3. Colossians chapter 3, verse 15. "And let the peace of God rule in your hearts, to which also you were called in one body, and be thankful." Let us all remember how God has blessed us, and let us all have a joyous and very thankful Thanksgiving.